I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Payday lenders are notorious for their sky-high interest rates, and the people who use these storefront creditors are the ones least able to pay. This hour, we'll talk with a ProPublica reporter about the situation in Missouri, where attempts to regulate these businesses, such as capping interest rates, keep getting defeated. We'll also look at how political contributions may be influencing the General Assembly's vote. Later, we'll have the latest installment of 90 Mile View. It's up to date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. The fight last year in Missouri between the payday loan industry and those seeking to cap the interest rates on those loans was unbelievably intense and very much behind the scenes. But now the tactics used by the industry are out in the open, and they don't differ much from what you might find in a barroom brawl. The upshot, the payday loan industry fought off an attempt to cap the interest rates on those short-term loans that folks take out at all those little stores you see in strip malls. The attempt was to cap those interest rates at 36%. That's right, 36%, but that wasn't high enough for the industry. Get this, the average two-week payday loan carries an annual percentage rate of 455% in Missouri. That's right, 455%. Now a story from the Pulitzer Prize-winning ProPublica documents what happened in the Show Me State and previews a repeat of the fight that's probably on tap for next year. Joining me now is Paul Keel. He's a reporter for ProPublica who wrote a long story about all this that you can read on our website at kcur.org. He joins us from the studios of NPR in New York City. And Paul, it's nice to have you. Good morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, you point out that Missouri is extremely fertile ground for the payday loan industry. How many locations do we have in the state? Because, you know, it seems like every time I turn around, they're pretty much everywhere.
I think the number I came up with, 1,400, and that was based on, actually, you know, they have to be registered, so the state keeps tracks of these lenders.
And that's like 1,400, which means like there's one store for every 4,000 Missourians or something like that.
Yeah, that was the analysis I came up with. And, yeah, you know, that gives you an idea of the penetration.
Well, why is Missouri such fertile ground, Paul? Because what is it about this state that leaves it so wide open to this industry?
Well, the laws are wide open. It's not really much more complicated than that. You know, and there are other states that are kind of similar. Texas has basically no regulation because they operate through essentially a loophole that doesn't cap their rates at all. So, you know, there are states that have much more regulation along these lines, which is something we can talk about. But in Missouri, there's essentially no cap to what they can charge.
Speaking of that, I mentioned in the intro a 455% rate is sometimes used in Missouri. That's the average two-week payday loan average, according to a document I have in my hands here that was delivered to Governor Nixon just earlier this year in February. Paul, how does that 455% rate compare to the national average?
Yeah, so the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau did an analysis, and they found the average, I believe, somewhere under 350% annual rate. And that's because, you know, there is greater regulation in other states. So when you compare a state like Missouri to the national average, which includes, you know, other states, Missouri's is, you know, over 100% higher.
Over 100% higher. Okay. So if the interest rate is so high, why would anyone agree to pay it? I mean, why do they go to these stores to begin with, Paul?
There's actually been some good research on this by the Pew Charitable Trust Foundation. And, you know, the story about payday loans is that, you know, there's a sudden emergency and you need just some quick cash to get over this little blip. But there's a lot of research to show that's not how people are using it. These are people, you know, the typical borrower has an income in the range of $30,000 a year. You know, they're barely getting by, and the use becomes habitual. So the average user, remember, this is a two-week loan, is taking out something like 10 loans a year, and you can get, you know, plenty of extreme circumstances where people are stuck in them for the whole year and end up paying many multiples of what they originally borrowed.
But no question, just to be clear here, that these folks are doing this voluntarily. They're walking into a store where I guess more and more these days they're taking out these loans online.
Right. Yeah. No, you have to walk into the store to get the loan. But, you know, the part of the process is you either give them access to your bank account or you give them a post-dated check for the amount that you owe them. So they do have once you walk in and you agree to that loan, you know, they have the power is in the lender's hands for sure.
But why agree to a loan of with carries an interest rate of 200% or 300% or 400%? Why not just go to your bank and take out a short term loan of some kind?
Well, there's two parts of that. One is, you know, these might be people who don't might not qualify for credit more conventional ways. You know,
and credit's tougher
card.
To get these days, right? Yeah.
The credit market has tightened up. But the other thing is payday lenders don't ask any questions. You walk in, you walk out 15 minutes later with a loan. They're everywhere. They're in your face. So that's kind of what, you know, there are alternatives, but they're definitely harder. There's more of a process involved. There'd be underwriting. If it's at a credit union, they kind of, you know, they want to develop a relationship with you. You know, there's nothing easier basically than going into a payday loan shop and getting a loan.
You know, it's accessible, it's quick, and again, you're saying you walk out in 15 minutes, you've got your money in your hand, and that begins to explain why these things are so omnipresent all over Missouri.
Yeah, and car title lenders, which I'm sure people see driving around, they're also omnipresent. You know, on the radio, they have their billboards, and a big part of their pitch is, you know, we don't ask any questions. We don't really care. You know, with an auto title lender, it's more about do you have a car and can we get title to it? And with payday lenders, it's more about do you have a bank account and do you have some form of income?
What do we know about the kinds of financial pressure these loans can put on people who take them out? Again, recognizing these people are doing so voluntarily, at least on one level. What do we know about the pressure that they face once they've taken out one or two or three of these loans?
Well, you're talking about eventually, you know, you end up paying multiples. So, again, there's lots of studies that have shown the money in this industry is from borrowers who are serious repeat users. And one thing I did is I looked at data that Washington State gathers from payday lenders because it's particularly good data to look at. And basically the story that was only about one-third of borrowers took out 9 or more loans in a year, but that was two-thirds of the loans taken out in that state. In other words, the vast majority of loans were going to people who were taking them out over and over and over again. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau found that about 75% of the revenues for the payday lenders they studied were from users who took out loans 10 or more times in a year. So that's where the profits are for this type of lending and for auto title lending and for installment lending.
So you can only assume that these folks are getting themselves in some very serious straits pretty quickly by going back multiple times.
Right. And part of what Pew has looked at is like once people try to get out of these, what do they do? You know, one answer is they simply can't pay and maybe they get sued in court. Another answer is they go to friends and family. They go to the options that were there from the beginning and that are hard options. You know, it's hard to go to friends and family to say, I'm stuck in this situation. Mm-hmm. But people end up essentially just deferring that hard choice or that situation by, you know, getting what appears to be an easy solution to the problem.
We're visiting with Paul Keel. He's a reporter for ProPublica who's written a long story about the Missouri payday loan industry and the big battle at the polls last year among voters over this whole issue. Let's go back to 2012, last year, Paul, and that big election year. Who came together to take a shot at putting a cap on these very high payday loan interest rates?
So the effort, particularly on the payday lending effort, was faith groups and community groups. That was the main driving force. And they paired up
faith
with
groups.
Essentially
why faith groups? Why are they interested in this?
That's the case pretty much all over the country and even in England.
Church groups you're talking
there.
About, yeah.
Right, yes. You know, it's an issue that's, you know, it's an age-old issue, usury. So that's definitely the case. Basically, any state that you look at, there's going to be faith groups that are concerned about this issue. And part of it is, you know, they have, I heard a lot from people who have groups that are there to kind of help people when they hit a rough spot, and they sometimes find themselves having to bail people out of payday loans, you know, with some sort of church lending program for emergencies. So it's something that becomes part of the, you know, the community problem they're well aware of.
Mm-hmm. So they came together last year, and what did they try to do?
So I think the first thing to say here is the legislature, they concluded there was no hope of any significant reform there. So what do you do when you can't go get a bill through the legislature, even though you have a governor who would sign a reform bill? You go through the ballot initiative process. So what's involved in that is you need to, at least back in 2012, they needed to gather almost 100,000 signatures from across the state in order to get that on the ballot for voters to vote on it in November. And what it would have done would have capped rates in the state at 36% per year. And that's a number that consumer advocates have embraced nationwide as kind of a reasonable cap to put in place.
Okay, just to step back for half a second, you interviewed an old source of mine, Mary Still, a state rep in Missouri who tried for several years to get a payday loan bill passed. And listeners might wonder why the General Assembly wouldn't pass a reform in a situation like this, just to cap interest rates at what many think is still a fairly robust rate of 36%. Mary Still told you that the General Assembly was bought and paid for. You know, Paul, how could that be?
Well, that's not just Missouri. That's pretty much the case anywhere. Because, you know, again, these companies are regulated on the state level. So the state house is where they exert, you know, their campaign contributions. They hire very high-priced lobbyists, and I think the number having the piece is over $300,000 in contributions in the 2010 cycle alone.
$300,000 sprinkled around to all the different lawmakers in Jefferson City. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not just one party either. And that just counts, I think, payday loan companies, so it'd be higher if you included, I think, other lenders as well. That's the case everywhere. So that they – and, you know, I think – you know, you look down in Texas, it's the same situation. Even though there's essentially no cap on any of that type of lending, there has been no success in getting some sort of bill that would cap it at all. So you actually have the cities, you have Dallas, you have San Antonio, you have Austin passing these resolutions that at least limit what payday lenders, how many loans people mm-hmm. can have, you know, in a series, that sort of thing. And they're trying to essentially force the hand of the legislature by passing these things at the city level.
Yeah. And again, Mary Still, a lawmaker from Columbia, she thinks she's going to pass something that I guess resembles do-gooder legislation, sort of commonsensical legislation, at least in her mind, to pass a cap on these interest rates. And she can't get very far down the road at all, right?
Yeah. And, you know, the funny thing there was, so the co-chair of the committee was a man named Don Wells, who's no longer in office. But this is the House Financial Services Committee. And he actually owned a payday loan shop called Quick Cash until about 2010, which is when these bills are pending. So
the chairman of the key committee here owned a payday loan shop, you're saying?
Right.
Okay.
And, you know, all indications was he was very the way that process went, I think Ms. Still didn't feel like she got a fair hearing.
Yeah. Okay. And so all this is happening. They can't make progress in the legislature. You're saying they go and they try to do an initiative petition process. How successful were they actually going bypassing the legislature and going directly to the voters with that?
Well, they got a lot of signatures, and certainly enough at first glance. But, I mean, we can get into what happened on the ground to skip to what ended up happening.
Tell us how you began your story, because you paint a picture at the beginning of your story of one petition taker out in Missouri and the problem she ran into. Paint that picture for us.
Sure. So the woman I use is a retired school teacher who's active in local issues in Springfield, and she was working for a local group she was hired to go out and get signatures, and she was doing this for many months. And basically one of the main things that the group funded by payday lenders, which had the name Missourians for Equal Credit Opportunity, did was they put a lot of boots on the ground. They hired people to do a number of things. First, there was a petition that was filed almost immediately after the 36% cap we've been talking about that purported to cap the rate at 14%, but it said that that cap would not be in effect unless there was a contractually agreed amount otherwise. In other words, it wouldn't have done anything at all because whenever you get a loan, there's a contract. Mm. And, you know, it was essentially a decoy petition that—
They're trying to confuse the voters a little bit there, perhaps.
That seems to be the case. And you know, a number of people I talked to who were out there gathering signatures, whether it was, you know, faith people doing it, you know, as volunteers or people like this woman in Springfield who are working as gatherers, said, you know, it seemed to actually— they had to explain to people a lot of times, no, if you sign that one, that actually doesn't do anything. You should sign this one. But eventually, the workers for the payday loan organization just kind of moved on to what's called blocking.
This is a political tactic, kind of a strong arm tactic. It's called blocking. Explain what that is.
It means just making it life as difficult as possible for the people who are trying to gather signatures. So there's a lot of people following, for instance, a school teacher named Marla Marantz around. Wherever she showed up, there was two, three people from the payday loan group who would show up. You know, they would try to get people to sign whatever their other petition was, or they would just simply try to get in front of her and you know, tell people this is an illegal petition, you shouldn't sign it, it's going to do this, it's going to do that.
And they were screaming actually at her, liar, liar, so that people would be discouraged from walking up and signing her petition, right?
Yeah, well, that actually anecdote comes from a woman who's a woman who's a minister at a church, actually in Liberty, who went down to Springfield and despite the fact she had her clerical collar on, was she said yelled at like in her face by a large man. So this is the sort of stuff that they were dealing with day in and day out.
Bottom line here, long story made short. Paul, you're saying that the petition effort eventually fell short.
It fell a little bit. I mean, so, you know, there's a process where they submit the signatures and the Secretary of State's office kind of farms it out to the different districts and they came back with a count. So they in aggregate, they got more than enough signatures that were approved, 118,000. But in one district, District 1, which includes North St. Louis, they fell 200 signatures short. Then a court battle ensued and, you know, these lending groups are very well funded. So, they were out there challenging every signature they could. So essentially at that point, the movement just decided that, you know, they're going to be able to run out the clock. So they just withdrew.
Okay. I want to bring Peter Barden in our conversation now. He's Director of Communications and Operations for the Online Lenders Alliance, or I guess the payday industry itself. Peter, you've been listening to our conversation. Thank you for taking a few minutes with us this morning.
Yeah, I'm happy to participate. But let me say...
Let me ask you a few questions here.
Having segued me in right after all of that sensationalism...
Peter, I've got some questions I want to bounce by here, okay,
yeah,
Peter?
We have nothing to do with the ballot initiative, and I'm not familiar with it, so...
Okay, I want to ask you some questions here. What about this notion of a 455% average interest rate for a two-week loan here in Missouri? That seems high to a lot of folks. Why so high?
Well, I think, first of all, fundamentally, you know, APR, which, you know, we work with the Online Lenders Alliance. This is a group of companies who provide short-term lending over the Internet. We abide by a very robust set of best practices as to how we go about working with customers, abiding by the law, working with regulators. We're innovators, treating customers with respect. With regards to the APR question, and of course, you know, to put out these loans, we have to attach an annual percentage rate to them, you know, according to regulations, according to law. The problem is that APR is an inadequate way to describe, you know, the cost of these financial products, and it's relatively misleading to the consumer. I mean, 455%, Steve, is you know, you've said it probably nine times on the broadcast so far.
Yeah.
It sounds astonishing. But the truth of the matter is, if you take out a $200 loan for 2 weeks and there is a $20 fee, in 2 weeks, when you pay that loan back, what does that loan cost you? It costs you $20. This is not an annual product. It's a short-term product.
Well, how about you take out a four-week loan?
But
Peter,
hang on
a second. What if you take out a four-week loan for $1,000? I did the math last night. I went to some calculating website. You do the math on that. It's $379 for a month-long loan of $1,000.
These are not inexpensive products. They are designed to be short-term. An option that is available to consumers who don't have any other options. I mean, if a consumer has a lower cost option, if they could go to their bank, if they could go to their credit union, if they could go to a family member and take out a cheaper loan, they would. But those credit options aren't available to millions of consumers who every day go to their search engines, type in small loans, short-term loans, payday loans, looking for that availability. And what they find are providers who can, you know, and consumers can comparison shop as they comparison shop for any other type of financial product online, whether they be, you know, loans,
right,
car loans, anything else, and find the best option available to them and take out those options. There are credible lenders.
Okay.
Many of them members of the Online Lenders Alliance.
Right. Peter, you know, and you've heard this before. There are critics out there who would say that given the changes in the banking industry, there's kind of a gap in the market now. And critics say, and you've heard this a lot, that you're simply gouging poor folks and taking advantage of a gap in the banking market these days by charging rates like this. What about it?
Our companies charge rates that are commensurate with the risk involved with lending money over the internet to consumers who have limited credit history or bad credit history. Now, we don't put out loans to people that we don't know, that we haven't, you know, had some kind of a research done. You know, all of the companies who are members of the Online Lenders Alliance use credit bureaus who have become involved with this industry to get a good sense of whether a consumer has the ability to pay the loan back. Many, many of our companies have underwriting capability to make sure that these are consumers that are creditworthy enough,
right,
for these short-term loans. However, you know, there can be a very high default rate.
What is the default rate nationally, Peter?
Particularly for an unsecured loan, and there's a risk involved with that, and with it comes a cost.
What's the national default rate right now? So give me a sense of what these lenders are up against.
It's probably in the 15% to 20% range on average.
But still, I mean, in Missouri, there's an effort here to pass a cap on the interest rate at 36%. What was so distasteful about that, at least from the view of the standpoint of the industry?
Listen, as I had mentioned to you at the beginning of this call, and I mentioned to your producer, I'm not knowledgeable about the Missouri initiative, so I can't really speak to it. But again, I do think that as a percentage, you know, as an annual percentage rate, you really have to have a more thorough discussion about whether or not APR is an appropriate way of describing these shorter-term products. I mean, if you go to an ATM and take out money from an ATM that is not your bank, and you do $100 and you pay a $3.50 fee, that's
right,
essentially a short-term loan. I mean, you don't annualize that rate. So the idea that you would annualize a rate on a short-term loan like this is it really is. I mean, it's great for sensationalism. It's terrific. Gets people listening, gets people reading. But in reality, it's misleading.
But it's not, though. Is it really, Peter? I mean, you have, again, you take out a loan at the average rate of 455% for a month, a $1,000 loan, you end up paying $380 back, Peter. That's happening all the time.
Well, I don't know about that particular case. I mean, I know for the most part, you know, our companies are lending at you know, $20, $30 per hundred that are borrowed on a short-term basis. The terms and conditions are very clear. Consumers can compare that with the cost of other things like bank overdraft fees and utility hookup fees and the rest of the cost of borrowing that they have. They do it every day. These are not, you know, people are seeking out this type of credit. There's not a marketing effort going on, you know, to try to lure people into a credit option, you you know, that is harder for them.
Well, there's people a lot of marketing
on
going on,
say,
though, Peter.
I need money.
Peter, there's a lot of marketing going on. I see it on TV all the time. I hear it on the radio.
We have some marketing that goes on from other companies. I would tell you from the Online Lenders Alliance, and you can go on our website, you know, onlinelendersalliance.org. You can take a look at the best practices that our members abide by with regard to marketing, with regard to terms and conditions, with regard to how we treat our customers, with regard to debt collection. We have very stringent rules on making sure that the customer is treated respectfully, making sure that the marketing is true, making sure that the terms and conditions are transparent. And so those companies who are members of Online Lenders Alliance, you know, are at the forefront in leading on best practices. Now, listen, there are other companies out there who operate, who are not members of our association, that don't abide by our best practices. I cannot speak to some of the things that they're doing. Like any other industry, there are good actors and there are bad actors.
And, Peter, is it fair to say the industry is sort of moving to more of an online kind of operation, that these little storefront, you know, tiny little storefront kiosks almost that we see all over the metro may become a thing of the past before too much longer?
Well, Steve, I think that like a lot of businesses right now, whether you're buying books or plane tickets or any other types of products, people are more and more doing their business online. And so, you know, we're seeing that trend in the short-term lending industry like we're seeing, in other industries.
Let's go to some phone calls here. Some folks been waiting for a while to react to our show here on payday lending. We want to know what you think about all this. Have you ever taken out a short-term payday loan? What was your experience like? And if you work at a payday loan store, we'd like to hear from you too. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. You can also tweet us @kcuruptodate. Justin from Sugar Creek is a payday loan office owner. Justin, good morning.
Yeah, I just wanted to start off by extending an invitation to any journalist or anybody that wanted to really come to my office and maybe see this from the perspective of a mom and pop. I'm not really familiar with a lot of things you guys are talking about because apparently it's on a corporate level, and I don't know many industries that when we start talking about the dirty details of the corporate level that aren't appalling. And so, you know, that's kind of across the board, and it's unfortunate. But on a mom-and-pop level, I can't really identify with what you guys are talking about. I can say that you made a slight error in your math as far as saying that they're charging $380 a month on $1,000, because that's 380%. And that would be breaking the law, and if you know of anybody that's doing
that...
No,
not that, breaking it out on an annual basis, though.
No, if it's 300% for a month, then yes, they are breaking it on an annual basis. We are capped at 500. So they would be breaking the law. And on my own contracts, I have the number to the Department of Finance so that every customer can see that if they have any questions, they can contact the Department of Finance.
Well Justin, how much are you charging your customers for a short-term loan?
I'm just saying your math is wrong.
Okay. How much
And in the state of Missouri, payday loans can only loan up to $500. That's for their whole company. Not per office. That's for however many offices you have. You can only loan up to $500 per one customer. So in that thing last year that was going to cap us at 36%,
right?
That would be telling us, as private companies trying to make money and pay bills and feed ourselves and feed our own families, that we could only make $180 per person per year. Now, at our so-called exorbitant rate that we charge now, it takes 6 paying customers to make up for one customer that doesn't pay. So if I loan you $200 and you don't come back in 2 weeks and pay the $34 to pay the interest and the $200 to pay the loan off,
right,
and you just disappear, which happens, and we don't like it to happen because we eat it, then I have to have 6 customers with $200 loans paying the full interest for the full 2 weeks just to break even.
So what's the average rate that you charge a customer for one of your short-term loans, Justin?
Let me dispel a few more things real quick.
Just answer that question, you can go ahead and dispel. Give me a sense.
The only way you could pay 455% interest is if you take out, let's say, $200. And every 2 weeks for a whole year, you come back, you pay the $200, the $34, then you take it right back out of $200 and use that over and over and over again for a full year. That's the only way you would reach that 455%. And I'm going to disagree with the previous gentleman who said that APR is unfair. I think it's very fair to give people information to make decisions. And I like the fact that we can be honest and open about what we charge.
Justin, be honest and open with me right now. How much are you charging for a short-term loan at your payday loan office in Sugar Creek?
17% for 2 weeks.
17%.
So if you
what was the issue then with the 36% cap that they were trying to push across the state last year?
That's for a whole year. That's not for 2 weeks. If you did my 17% for 2 weeks, but averaged out for a year, like I said, you would have to pay off that $100, take it right back out at $100 every 2 weeks for a whole year. Then on that $100, you'd pay 443.21%. But that is coming in every 2 weeks, completely satisfying the loan, and then taking the principal amount back out at exactly where it was without ever paying it down. And I do think this conversation is a little bit unfair, because if I have a customer that has three checks that are about to hit the bank, and they're going to get three overdraft charges of $34, and they don't get paid for 7 days, so they get continuous overdrafts on all three checks for those 7 days, that's $186 for 7 days from a bank. They cover it. That's a loan, but they get to call it overdraft. They get to play semantic games. We are at least honest about what we charge and the products that we're providing.
So, well, Justin, there are a whole lot of your payday loan stores across the state of Missouri right now. It clearly is a thriving, healthy business because there's so many of them, 1,400, to hear our reporter from ProPublica, Paul Keel, talk about it here.
And if Paul knew this history here, during the 90s, payday loans took off big, and they've actually been retreating a bit. The market got saturated. But one of the things here in Missouri, and I'm sorry to step on political toes, but one of the things here in Missouri that really launched the payday loan industry was the casino industry.
Okay.
And you have all kinds of loan shops that do easy money, no credit for cars, that are basically repo factories that only work in poor neighborhoods. And, I mean, to focus on payday loans is hurting the poor when we live in a country where the year I was born, 1978, it took 35 American employees to equal the pay of one CEO, and now it takes 435 American employees to equal the pay of one CEO.
That's a whole different topic, Justin. Listen, I appreciate
it, but we're a symptom. We're not the cause.
Justin, I appreciate your phone call. I'm glad you called in. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our very good conversation here about the payday loan industry. We'll get to some more details from Paul Keel's very good report in ProPublica about some of the tactics the industry used to try to defeat this attempt to cap interest rates at 36% just last year. And later on this hour, our latest installment of 90 Mile View. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about the payday loan industry and that big fight last year in Missouri to cap interest rates at 36%. The industry, according to a ProPublica article, defeated that attempt. We'll have one more attempt in 2014. I'll go back to some phone calls here before I go back to Paul Keel from ProPublica with some questions about his story. Let's go to Chappie from Parkville. Chappie, good morning. You there, Chappie? Let's go to Susan from Independence. Susan, good morning.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Good morning. I just was curious about how hard if they were aware of how hard people worked in the Kansas City area, up in St. Joe and in Liberty, to get those signatures. I was one of those who was out there, and it isn't easy because you have to explain so much. Mm. People have no idea how difficult it is, and that once you're caught in now, how difficult it is to get out. So, I was hoping the guy from ProPublica would finish what happened then, because when it went to the court case, it wasn't so much because we didn't have the numbers. We had the numbers of signatures, but they kept finding technicalities to keep going, and they had funding, and we don't.
We don't have
major funding.
Let's bring in Paul Keel from ProPublica. What did happen at the end, Paul? Explain that to us.
Right. So according to the Secretary of State's official count, they fell a little over 200 signatures short.
In one congressional district, right? There's a certain number of
district.
Required signatures in each congressional district of the state. Yeah.
You have to have, I think it's 5% of voters in six of the non-congressional districts. And so they fell. That's how fell. So that led to, you know, a court fight because the side that wanted the cap, you know, had volunteers going through signatures, and they were finding lots of people who should have been counted and were, you know, ruled out, you know, unfairly. And so they filed a lawsuit, but then the other side filed a lawsuit saying, no, that count was actually good, and actually here's a lot more signatures that should be thrown out. So it was going to be this long legal thing, and I think basically because the Secretary of State's count had found them to be short to begin with, they had a higher hill to climb to challenge it, to get it through. And I think the conclusion was that, you know, there just wasn't enough time before the election for that court fight to go through and for them to actually get it on the ballot.
It was a heck of a fight, no question about it.
Yeah. No, it was they're very close. And so, you know, you got to have money for lawyers. You got to have money to supplement the volunteers out there getting signatures. So it's an expensive effort. And, you know, at least last time they were outspent a little over 9-1.
Right.
So, you know, it's definitely a David Goliath type situation.
Let's go to Diane from Overland Park, who works for a payday loan office. Diane, good morning.
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure, good to have you, Diane.
Thank you. Actually, my name is Imani. I have a comment and a question. I think maybe we're asking the wrong question here. I think we need to be asking, why are there so many more people who need this service for a longer period of time? I think that probably accounts for people taking loans out for longer periods of time for higher amounts of money. A lot of people who are low-income, underemployed people who are using these loans to subsidize their income, which is why they can never pay them off, because they always need more money because they're not making what they used to make. I have worked for an internet payday lending institution that is located in Kansas because the laws in Missouri are more restrictive. And they have more than 2,000 names that they operate under, and it's only one company. So I don't know if that number that Paul Keel is stating is truly reflective of the number of people who actually own these institutions. I don't know that there are as many mom and pop payday lending institutions as there may be larger companies that are operating out of more than one name. And I just want to say that I worked for a advocacy group that was called CCO, Church Community Organization. I found out that they were more operating as an AstroTurf organization. They had Ronnie DePasco, when he was alive, write part of the legislation, and then I found out that his brother, Ronnie DePasco's brother, owned a lot of the payday lending institutions in the state of Missouri. So
right.
He was operating through CCO to get the law written, looking like it was a reform, but in a way that actually helped his business.
All right.
So, you know, I think the people that are advocating, they need to find out who they're advocating for, because they get people go out there to get those signatures, and then they go out to write the law to benefit the people that
All right.
actually have.
And I got to move on here, but I appreciate your phone call. Paul Keel, no question that probably corporations are the predominant owners of many of these companies these days.
Yeah, so the biggest, and 1400 is the number of branches. So yeah, the biggest one is QC. Also, it goes by Quick Cash is the name of the stores. There's a little over 100 in the state. That's the biggest in terms of branches. So yeah, it's there are big national companies that tend to be the most numerous in every state in terms of the number of locations.
Paul, we just have a few minutes left. I wanted to get to one other point you made in your very good story. Again, you can find Paul's story on our website, kcur.org. Just go to the up-to-date page. You describe in the story a very concerted effort that the industry undertook in the black community last year to change minds and win support for the status quo in Missouri when it comes to payday loans. Why did the payday loan industry target the African-American community to begin with?
Well, I think it's, you know, it was an effort to fracture the coalition that was, you know, supporting the petition drive, and particularly in St. Louis and Kansas City. A lot of the signature gathering was being done by these churches, and particularly, you know, in the cities for Kansas City and St. Louis, you know, those are churches with predominantly black congregations. So this was both in St. Louis and Kansas City. For the payday lending side, there's a man named Willie Green, who's actually a former
NFL player.
A wide receiver, who actually has had this position with a number of national payday lending organizations, basically as the minority representative. And so he would go in and sort of make the pitch to individual people. I should say, alongside that, there were more hardball tactics, like a letter that essentially you know, told people that they could go to jail if they made some mistake with gathering signatures, or they could lose their nonprofit status. And, you know, by the way, we'll be watching you.
The industry actually came to Kansas City. Industry reps did, and visited with the Reverend Wallace Hartsfield. You write in your story. He's a very well-known minister in this town. What kinds of incentives did they seem to be offering him, Paul?
So Reverend Hartsfield's description of the conversation was that this is actually Mr. Green, the former NFL player, who Mr. Hartsfield said he made offers to, you know, he was interested in other things that the church was involved in, other community efforts. And Reverend Hartsfield said he got the clear impression that he was being told, you know, we'll help with this, these other things, if maybe you're not supporting this CAP initiative.
Other projects that your church needs, other capital improvements, I gathered from the conversation.
Right, and I try to give the context that this is kind of consistent, that there have been, you know, there are charitable donations. I give the example of one in Denver to the Urban League there, while the payday loan topic was pretty hot. So it's part of the general approach. And I should say that the installment lenders, which is another type of high-cost lender we haven't really talked about, also had a kind of a different approach, and they hired some very high-profile lobbyists to make the pitch to, in particular, African-American community leaders.
Back to a couple calls here. Robert from Independence. Robert, you're on Up to Date. Our topic, payday loans. Good morning.
Thank you. I'm 75 years old. I've been self-employed all my life. I now live on just my Social Security, which is less than, way below poverty level. I have, because of my business failure 15 years ago, I've not been able to get a bank loan. I have repeatedly used payday loans to get through health, utility emergencies, having the utility shut off, just for emergency bills.
Right.
And I have been able to get them. The unfortunate thing, which I am really angry about, is that I have become addicted to them because it's my only source of getting money in an emergency, and I'm 75 years old. I have been perpetually paying on a payday loan for more than 5 years. I don't know. I have not totaled the cumulative interest that I've paid, but I know the last one that I took out.
Right.
The monthly rate was 17.85%. The APA rate was something like 240, 50%.
All right.
The problem is I can never in any 1 month pay off the loan.
I'm going to have to scoot on. Robert, thank you for your call. Peter Barden, again, he's a director of communications and operations for the Online Lenders Alliance. I'll give you the final word here, Peter.
Well, I think that the big issue here is that there just simply is not credit. There are not credit options available, you know, to people who can't get bank loans, who don't have friends and family who can lend it to them. You know, the short-term lending industry, whether it's online or storefronts, is providing, you know, what is only the only credit out there, you know, for folks to be able to use. And I think that what we really should focus on is, even further, is how can we create additional credit options? How can we create a national standard to provide, you know, short-term loans to people who need them, where the banks and credit unions are not providing them? You know, government, media,
right,
so-called consumer groups love to be critical, but they offer no opportunities and no options for people who, like some of your callers, who needs short-term loans.
Peter, I'm going to have to scoot on. I appreciate your time very much again. Peter Barden with the Online Lenders Alliance. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much.
Paul Keel with ProPublica. Again, his story on our website, kcur.org. Thanks so much, Paul. Sure appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.